Welcome to the CRA Resource Show. CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with the single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. My name is Becky Clark, and I'm Senior Operations Manager at CRA Resources. Today, we are sitting down with Angela Roberts, Head of Recruiting, and special guest Lyle G. Lyle is President and Founder of G Farm Consulting, Inc. So before we get started, make sure to visit creresources.com/blog to catch up on our latest blog posts. You can also sign up there to get this content delivered to your inbox. So I'll turn it over to Angela, and she can give us more details for our topic today.
So happy to have you back, Lyle, my favorite podcaster of all times.
Thank you so much. I'm back from the wilderness briefly.
Well, one of the things that we wanted to pick your brain is, of course, I mean, you've done the FTE thing, you've done the consulting thing, and in the current market, the way that things are, I mean, well, that would be the current market, right? But I mean, we're so different than the way things were 5 years, 10 years ago. What I wanted to do is spend a little bit of time picking your brain about what your job search strategy is, especially as a consultant, because it is, you know, whenever I start talking up to people about what their goals are and their strategy, a lot of times they go, well, duh, I just want a job. Okay, I get that. But there's a whole different concept between having a job search goal, which is an end result, and daily goals that really feed into a strategy. So I want us to spend some time on that. But then the other thing is, whenever you and I were dialoguing about this through email, you said, you know what? I'd really love to have Angela's take on the current market. And I think it's a very valid discussion because things are so different now, aren't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and then in the run-up to this discussion we had, yeah. I know, brain no good, Lyle brain bad. So, Lyle talk no good. It was interesting to me as an outside consultant, you know, not someone who is inside and has the metrics, Angela, that you guys do. It was always interesting as a consultant to kind of try and gauge the state of the market when I was doing a job search. So kind of one of the first things that I would do, and I don't know that I had formalized this as a plan. This is just kind of how my career had evolved as a consultant. It was to talk to people like you. I have other people that are, you know, that have been recruiting for a number of years, and just kind of take a temperature, right? You know, take a temperature of the market. What does it look like? Good market, bad market. And then I think what that allowed me to do is to calibrate my expectations. So having that sort of information. So an example would be, how are rates looking right now? How many candidates are you seeing per position? You know, is it a market where it's heavy with too many candidates and not enough jobs? Or is it too many jobs and not enough candidates? And that kind of inside baseball, whatever, information was very helpful to me to then begin to formulate my strategy, right? Which was, okay, do I want to look at a specific tier of jobs? Can I be very picky? You know, is it people are beating a path to my door? Lyle, you're the best. We really need you. Yeah, that's great. You know, feed Mago. That's lovely. But I wanted to, so then could I be like, well, I want these hours and I want these indications and I want this experience and I want blah, blah, blah. Or was the market in a very different place where it was like, listen, man, you know, we got a handful of openings. You're one of 12 that we're going to submit. Right. So if you get in there, y'all need to say, you know, you really kind of level set and make sure X, Y, Z that you take these comments to heart. So from someone who doesn't have their own consulting firm, right, it was always, always very helpful for my first step was really to be like, what is the state of the state?
I love that you asked that question. It's interesting to me because the majority of our candidates do not. And when we volunteer the information, they don't believe us. Now, I'll preface True. It with...
Seriously? They're like, oh, those experts. Oh, that Angela. She only has, you know, she only sees like however many thousands of recs. What could they possibly know?
I know, right? Well, with that being said, there, and I've said this so many times, but I like to say it because it's true. And then I always laugh at myself because of the way I say it. But recruiters can be pretty damn sleazy, right? And there are a lot of really, really bad agencies out there. And they hire recruiters and then they don't train them how to be recruiters. Because there's a big difference between the talent acquisition specialist, which is what we do, versus a recruiter. Recruiter, to me, if they're in the nature of the true recruiting business, is more like a sleazy car salesman, right? So I mean, they're just trying to make a hit, and they don't really care about the trends. And they, quite honestly, they don't care about you either. They just need to submit, because if they don't get so many submits that day or that week, they're going to lose their job. And it's a different motivation factor. And I think our audience needs to understand that you need to align with talent acquisition specialists, even if their title is a recruiter, because there's a different way to look at it. But you're right. I mean, a lot of times we'll tell candidates, hey, look, you're asking for 30-40% higher than market's paying right now. And they're like, well, I'm worth it. I have no doubt that in your mind you were worth it. But if they're not going to pay you for it, you know, I had a director reach out to me yesterday, and he's been laid off. And he's like, I'm like, you know, I'll be happy to create a job seeker profile for you. We'll keep you in mind, but I want to be transparent. Our primary, you know, focus is CRAs. But hey, we'll reach out if something comes open that fits, you know, your qualifications and your preferences. And he said, well, I would be willing, and I hate that word willing, I would be willing to take a senior CRA job if the price was right. And I was like, well, so would every other CRA.
Exactly.
You're competing, right?
Yeah. So, and that's not going to hang a bunch of weird conditions on it either, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And when you get that director offer, you're going to bail that senior CRA job to go get that director position. And I think that you've got to align yourself with someone that can have those very transparent discussions with you and understand what the market really does look like, because it is important. It does change.
Yeah, and someone who specializes in the role that you're looking for, that's not every recruiter. We're a little unique because we're a niche. We specialize in the placement of CRAs and a few other adjacent roles, but your mainstream recruiter, they don't know what the trends are like for this role you're going for. They just want to get this filled. They're like, oh, you'd be willing to do a CRA gig? Okay, let's see if I got one of those in my bag of all these different roles. It could even be across different industries. You never know. Yeah. So if you're going with somebody who knows this role that you're going for, trust them that they're in it day in and day out. They know the trends. That's your best bet.
That's such a good point, right? You know, and I find that a little bit fascinating and kind of disheartening that a group of people, right, that, you know, we're clinical folks, right, or we're research people. Our lives involve generating data, objective, hopefully, data. And for the people in that industry to be like, no, those data are fake. I don't believe those because it's uncomfortable. No, man, come on. That's like, that's antithetical to what we do for a living. So I'm trying to see both sides. I think it can be a challenge when the reality conflicts with what someone has in their mind, you know? And so for example, Angela, I want to, you know, the pre and post COVID, I think the timing of that, right? And how the market has changed pretty substantially, at least from my viewpoint, to be like, all right, this is the new reality, right? These are the levels. These are the rates. You don't see these 4-year 100% contracts. That just doesn't exist anymore or very rarely in the new reality. So as the outsider, as the job seeker, right, having a resource like CRA Resources is incredibly beneficial, having y'all's expertise. But then the onus is then on us, on the job seekers, to believe it, right? And you know, when you are given the behind the curtain peek, don't deny it. It's not in your interest to like be shining people on, right? It's not in your guys' interest to just be blowing smoke and be like, oh no, the market sucks. Ha ha ha. Right. Like there's no upside. So why would you lie about that? Like it's just not.
Yeah. Cause we only get paid when we place you. So why wouldn't we, you know, so here's Angela's vision and view of the market.
Nice.
I see the job market like a grandfather clock. Right. And what I pay attention to is where the pendulum's swinging today. And if you think of that and you put it into that perspective, because the job market's pendulum will always swing. And what your job really is and what our job is to understand where that pendulum is today. And on one side of the pendulum swing is employer driven market. And on the other side of the pendulum swing is a candidate driven market. And if you're trying as a candidate or consultant to try to figure out where that pendulum is, you have a very shaded view because you're only seeing a bit of it. Mm-hmm. And if you do have a healthy concern or you don't, you have a healthy mistrust of recruiting agencies, and you should have a healthy mistrust of recruiting agencies, then don't just ask one, ask multiple. But here's what you don't do is you don't go out and you don't go lamenting on LinkedIn and everybody else that doesn't have a job is joining in, because now, again, you're skewing. People tend to cluster. They ask opinions of individuals that they want to hear their answer from. Okay. And so what you want to do, to your point, is push yourself out and stretch yourself and ask opinions from different experts within the industry. And the other out of work people are not experts. They're experts at being out of work. But if they're the only ones that you're asking the questions of, then it's not going to give you. And what I will tell you, too, is don't freaking trust the government, because the government right now is reporting a 4.2% unemployment rate. That's a crock of crap. I'm going to tell you that right now. And Trump has been all up in arms with the way that they're gathering those reports. There's no technology behind that, y'all. This is like surveys sent out to handfuls of companies and, you know, all of this garbage. I'm required to do a census every year about whether or not I've laid people off, et cetera. It's all manually pulled and aggregated, and it's a bunch of garbage. You, again, now go back out to LinkedIn and look at this. Thousands of people that are lamenting over the thousands of applicants that they've submitted, you know that that 4.2% is a load of crap. You know it is. And so what you have to do is put your pulse, plus it's industry specific, but you've got to put your pulse on those individuals that are trying to place the jobs. And it could be talent acquisition, but it could also be your HR people at your very large companies as well. Go have conversations with them and really understand, is the pendulum swinging on the employer side, which means I as a candidate need to be really flexible, or is the pendulum swinging on the candidate side, which means I have more ability to demand, but if you get too damn selfish, then they're going to remember it when the pendulum swings back over to the employer side.
And I think, Angela, this is, I don't know that this is something we've touched on in a discussion, but it underpins a lot of these conversations, which is who you are as a, I was going to say as a person, that's not entirely true, as an employable person, right? As an employable quantity, Lyle G has a certain set of, I have a reputation, right? Mm-hmm. I have a reputation in the industry. And so how you act, and unfortunately, when we're in industry, we are constantly being judged, right?
Yes.
You're constantly being judged. Your actions have consequences. So while it might feel good to go on the LinkedIn rant, right, is that the best way? Because that's all searchable. The internet never forgets. It's so true. I get that, right? You know, I remember a time where there was a time before everyone had a freaking camera, which is probably part of the only reason I got out of college without being murdered, right? Or being employable, the stuff, the shenanigans we used to get up to. But it's just, I don't know how, I hope people realize this, you know, and like the youth of America, they're called like, you're always your brand, right? You're always your brand, you're always your brand. The way we used to think about this, the way I used to think about this is, I am my reputation.
Right.
Okay. So yes, it's good. You know, you want to go out there, you want to kvetch with your friends and around these unemployed folks. Hey man, I get it. Right. Like it feels good. But if that gets brought into your job search, if that gets brought into your professional life, and it's very easy for those worlds to collide.
It is.
You know, it sucks to have to say this, to kind of be like, hey, you always got to kind of keep one eye open. But this is something where I think the Z's and the younger generations are almost, they're intimately aware of this kind of by default, which is public and private personas. I would say that that was a lesson I had to learn. Luckily, I learned it before I did anything exceptionally stupid that would stay on the internet forever. But to your point, Angela, about talking to various constituencies, listening to what they have to say, incorporating that, not blowing up your spot on LinkedIn, not just going, you know, be aware that if you're going to be the picky candidate, right, that could live with you for a long, long time.
Exactly.
And this is not to say devalue yourself. I would never, as the outside person, as the job seeker, I would never counsel someone to devalue themselves. But I would counsel, be realistic, right? You might be real pissed off about the state of the market. Totally understandable. Doesn't change the market.
But it's the state of the market.
Right?
I agree.
You know, you can push the rock up the hill all you want, but that rock's still going to roll back over you. So it's listening to the experts, making sure that you understand their viewpoints, right? Because the comments about talent acquisition are incredibly useful, I think, from an outside perspective. But ultimately, right, the reality is the reality. And I think going back to job searching, what is one of the key elements is expectation setting, right?
I agree.
And it's hard. It's hard, especially like if you're the primary breadwinner in your house, if you have a need for a certain rate, right? You're like, I've been getting this rate for so long and I've adapted my life to this rate and I think people that count on me. I understand all of these pressures, right? And it's like my response to that is, well, you know, I'm not going to take a job if I'm not making whatever, 150 an hour, whatever, you know, giant number. My response to that is, would you rather have 110 or zero?
I agree.
Right?
I agree.
And mm-hmm. it's a really kind of brutalist reality check way of existing. And so it's not easy to hear. And I think that, you know, I think that from an outside perspective, we can become suspicious. You know, like you mentioned about like, oh, those recruiters, they're just trying to lowball me. Those recruiters, they're just trying to get me
in the door
at a bad number. And the problem is, right, some of them do. And so that's where getting to a recruiting, like Siri Resources, a place that you trust with people that you trust that are transparent. I know that Angela, so for the listeners, right, Angela is among the most transparent recruiter talent managers you'll ever meet. To be perfectly honest, right? Like in my experience, incredibly transparent, can ask her questions about rates and things like that and utilizations that most organizations are loath to disclose. So yeah, so I think that, you know, so job seeking, what do you need to do? Take the temperature, talk to your resources, to Angela's point. The next thing is set your mind to reality because you might not like it. In fact, I know sometimes you're like, oh, are you kidding me with this? But that is where the industry is. When you get good information, you got to believe it.
I agree. And then you got to establish what roles you want or that you're and I don't like the whole I'm willing thing, but these are the roles that I'm able and willing to do and commit to. Because
that's key.
That is really the key, isn't it, Becky? Because again, we right now, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I'm not trying to like put a gloom and doom out there, but I mean, again, we have to be realistic. My husband's in the stock market, and I'm going to tell you right now, he sees a lot of things that we in the real world don't.
Right.
Or maybe he's in the real world and I'm not. I don't know. Whatever.
He's further ahead than we are.
Yeah. But he doesn't think that we're done yet. And what I've been coaching my team is we're getting so many managers and executives applying for CRA positions and all over their resume and their career trajectory and the story that they're telling, it's management and here's my progressive career growth. And sometimes it's impressive. I mean, and I would be honored to represent some of these individuals for management and director level positions, but I cannot put my clients at risk in representing you for a CRA position whenever your resume screaming this career trajectory. So your next step after you've done this litmus and you've done this pulse check of the industry is identify the brand you want to personify based off of the roles that you're able and willing to do and commit to. Because if you've been a manager and that's been your career trajectory, but you're now able and willing to commit to being a CRA, now you got to rebrand yourself. You can't just give me your director thing and say, hey, give me, find me. No, I need a CRA resume and I need a statement from you as to why you're able and willing to step back. And it can't be because I can't find a job. You make something up if you need to, but there's got to be a story there.
Right.
You know,
right.
I want to travel more, work-life balance. My kids are out of the house now. I've got more time to, you know, be
really
on site, whatever.
CRA. I mean,
love the site interaction, you know, and this is such valuable information for folks. I hope people are really paying attention because that is such a good point, right? I'm a director right now, right? I've got a CRA resume. I've got a CRA CV.
We asked you for one.
Yeah, that's right. Right. I've got a senior CRA CV. And people are like, well, that's deceptive, Lyle. You know, you're a director. I'm like, it's in no way deceptive because it's all my experiences, but it's tailored for the particular positions because Angela and Becky's points, right? A hiring manager is going to look at that and be like, you're a director level, Lyle, or you're a whatever level, you know, why would you want to overqualified immediately and just discard you because there's so many candidates. It's so easy to get disqualified. So is there a compelling story? Does the story all track, right? That is part two, right? So that's kind of a next part. I don't know that there's numbers. I hadn't thought that far ahead. Sorry. But like, you know, number one, do the background. I'm just making up the numbers as we go. number two, though, right, is understand what roles you can take, what roles you will take, and what your story is for taking those roles. Agreed. You know, like, wow, you've run, you know, global studies. You've done, why are you want to be a monitor on a phase one study? Well, for me, I love monitoring phase one studies because that's the very first part of research. Right. And so to be involved in the either the first in human studies or like the first in patients, I have to say I kind of love it. And I think I could build a fairly compelling story behind that. Right. And none of it's I'm not falsifying my experience in any way. I'm not deceiving companies. Right. But what I am doing is why. And this we've talked about this a bunch, Angela, you know, a lot of these things. It's like, why? What value do you bring to this organization? Yeah. Right. Who could potentially bring you in? Why are you going to bring you in, Lyle, who was a director? Right. Who's got 26 years of industry experience versus this other person? Well, here's what I can bring. Right. For me, the way I would sell those kind of roles is I'd be like, listen, yes, I've done monitoring. I've also directed and I've run global programs. But what I bring to a monitoring role is I have an idea of where this fits in your development trajectory. I understand. That's exactly right. Right. I understand when you guys are telling us, hey, this protocol has to be done this way. I can understand why that is. I can grok that, and I can either explain that to the sites, I can explain that internally, and I can also help internal folks from stepping on landmines if they so choose, right? Because like, hey, man, I've been here. Yeah. I've seen this trajectory. Have you thought about X, Y, and Z? So
I agree. We've got a small sponsor. Yeah, I want to stay on that topic because I love that topic. It's so important, Lyle. And we've got a small sponsor from another country that is running studies here, and they don't want to use a CRO. And we've worked with them a couple of times now on their projects, but they don't have boots on the ground here in the United States. And I guess we could say we're their boots on the ground, but we're giving them contract CRAs to go monitor their studies. And I gave her a consultant who's been a project manager for a very large chunk of his career. And I sold him from a perspective of depending on how much, I don't know what your strategy is, and I don't know how much market share you want to snatch in the United States, but assuming that you do want to continue to grow here, it would behoove you to consider someone with project management experience so that he can be your go-to when you start designing additional studies here in the United States. And by the way, he also consults as a CRA, so he could get your monitoring taken care of. And so I understand this role, and he understands today's role is monitoring, but let's look at future for you. And she's like, oh my God, I just love, you know, I mean, it was, you know, obviously I should put an accent on, but yeah, but I mean, it you have to align with a talent acquisition person who and the biggest difference, just for the audience to understand, the biggest difference between a recruiter and a talent acquisition specialist is the talent acquisition specialist cares about building a relationship with you. It's not a one and done. It's a long-term relationship. And so the reason why this guy was so key is because we knew what he wanted and what he was capable of doing because we spent that time with him. And then I knew what the client wanted and what their potential future was because I spent time with her, and now you make a match. And that is different than us just throwing resumes over the fence hoping something will stick. And that's why you've got to align with the right people. But you've got to tell your story too, because I can't help you if I don't know what you want.
That's right. And if you don't, as the person, as the candidate, if you don't know what you want, no one else can tell you what you want, right? You need our perspective. Like, this is what I want. And be candid, right? Like, you know, Angela is a font of candidity. I don't know if that's the word. Candidness, right?
I feel like I have a disease now, Becky.
I think I just gave you a tropical disease. Sorry. Put some ointment on it. You'll be fine. It'll be fine. But no, it's interesting. So I think matching that candidness is critical. And again, that's, you know, this is where the difference between a recruiter and a talent acquisition, this is such valuable information for outside folks. We never hear this, right? People never hear this. You just don't know. So, but that mindset of building a relationship with a company, I can't tell you, Angela, how many times I've gotten repeat business, right? Because the person that brought me in understood my capacities. They're like, yeah, you know, I know you're bringing in Lyle for a senior CTA role. However, right, I also know company X that you have intended, you know, you want to grow. And so having someone with that senior CRA role but has this additional experience and can move into different roles, right, as long as that candidate is willing. So it's really, really important. I think, to build that connection. I mean, I talk about networking all the time on these podcasts. I know that I'm like, yeah, you know, build your network, right? And I'm kind of a bit chatty, so I have a leg up on that kind of stuff. But it is, but having a relationship with a talent acquisition provider such as yourselves, had that allows the candidate, it really allows the maximum, it maximizes your opportunities.
It does.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It
so
absolutely
that's,
does.
And so being I guess.
Honest, yeah. Being honest about it is really key, because a lot of times we could tell the candidate's hiding something, and I think it's out of fear. You know, they've got small kids at home and they don't want to tell us that because they really don't want a lot of overnights, or they've got, you know, something else going on, or they really don't want to do this, but they have to, or, you know, just, and again, I understand, you know, a healthy respect and suspicion of recruiting agencies, but if you want, and there was a guy that we just talked about today that he had a career progression to where he was a CRA from 2014 to 2016. Same company showed that he then moved into clinical operations from 2016 to 2024. Yeah. Well, that means he's not monitored since 2016, but he wants us to represent him for a monitoring gig. And so then he comes back and he says, oh, but when I was an operations manager, I did a dual role. I monitored too. Okay, well, then why does your resume say that you ended your monitoring gig in 2016? Well, right. Because I wanted management positions. Well, you just asked me for a CRA position, right? Mm-hmm. So you see where the loop starts. I mean, and then you get into this really big, very, very tight twist. Mm-hmm. And then you wonder why recruiters are like, okay, I'm done. We're going to the next candidate because, yeah. You know, I mean, get your story together.
Right. And I think, Angela, any friction that, you know, in the marketplace right now, which I feel is very employer focused, like I think the pendulum is in that direction. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It is.
Any kind of friction that is felt by a hiring manager, like, there's 30 of y'all, right?
Exactly.
I got 30 names on my desk. Any friction, I'm on to the next one.
That's absolutely right. That is absolutely right. And I think I think hiring managers miss some really good talent. Because I don't think candidates understand you got to be really darn buttoned up in order to be able to progress in this kind of a market. And you could walk on water, but if you can't explain to me how you do that, then I don't really care that you walk on water.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
or
right.
If your LinkedIn profile doesn't match your resume, you know, we're not the only ones that are going to go out there and look. These potential employers are going to go. They're going to see, is everything consistent? Is your brand cohesive? Are there any pitfalls? Well, the years are off from that employment, from your resume. I mean, we look at all of those nitty gritty because they're also going to look at that. So you need to make sure everywhere that you're buttoned up.
Yep. Yeah. Such a good point, Becky. And especially with, like, I imagine with the automation as it increases, right? Those kind of programmatic checks are so easy to do.
Yeah.
So easy to do as a first way to kind of, to filter people, right?
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, if you're online and CV does not match 100%, right? There's some friction. You're out. Shoot, next one, right?
Mm-hmm. And we call them pink flags sometimes. It's not necessarily a red flag, but it's a pink flag. It's maybe this could become a red flag. And if we see too many pink flags, we're out. How are we going to explain it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it sounds, you know, I think, and this is getting back into where the market is right now, you know, if a market is very employee focused, you have more tolerance for pink flags as a recruiter, as a hiring manager, right? The fact we're way over on the employer driven side right now. Maybe one pink flag is enough. You're like, I got more people, you know?
Well, so exactly. Yeah.
It behooves us to be real buttoned up as candidates. So.
Well, I agree. I mean, and to your point, you've got a whole sea of candidates to submit, and we try to submit to our clients the top three of each position. And if I've got 6, 7, 8 candidates on the first day that the team is, you know, vetted and we've, you know, they're all 100% qualified anyway. And I want to look at those top, you know, however many, and I'm going to pick my top three. And if there's pink flags, then I got to go back and then say, okay, recruiter, you need to really poke at this. Cause I'm not really, now that person just missed out on the first submission round, which means they probably missed out on the job. And so it really is very important. And I think if you look at, if we just kind of talk about the big differences between now and even pre-COVID, you know, artificial intelligence has been around since I was in college, and I was in college in the 80s. I'm an old. And matter of fact, they taught us how to program stuff like that. I mean, you know, so it's just that it's a buzzword now. And when it comes to applicant tracking systems, there's more automation than there is artificial intelligence, but they're still using the words. But if you look at pre-COVID, and especially back earlier in the 2000s, you just sent your resume in. And you didn't worry about matching anything to the job description. And now only about 15% of resumes actually even make it to the human eyes. And so if you aren't smart about comparing what's on that job description and if the job description doesn't exist, then what is the typical requirements for the role or whatever, and making sure that your resume is seated well with the appropriate keywords, no one is going to see your resume.
Right.
And what we do whenever we get a position, because I write the job descriptions for our clients. So we get the position and we put it out there. The first thing we do is we do a search within our database within the location, and based off of the job description match to the keywords in the person's resume, the ones that bubble up to the top are the ones we talk to first. And so if you don't know how to do that, I'm going to be doing a webinar on that. If you don't know how to look at the job description or the role and identify keywords that need to be added into your resume so that you can get some humans to lay their eyes on your resume, you're going to miss out. That's one of the right. biggest differences in today's market, I think.
So to me, what that very valuable information, Angela, what I heard, one of the things I heard through that discussion was tailor yourself.
Yes.
Right. So understand the job market. I'm kind of making a numbered list in my head. I don't know why, but right. Understand the job market. Believe the information you hear. Be realistic about what you are and what you're going to, you know, what exists for you that you qualify for. And then tailor yourself. Right.
Agreed.
If you can't make it past the automated screening of keyword matches on CV to job description, and that's going to go through, almost all CVs are going to go through that process. Right.
Almost
and so I think
them.
It's at the time of where like hiring manager had a stack of paper on his or her desk. Right. And went through those. That crap is long gone.
Agreed.
Never to return, probably. So, you know, I mean, really. Right. It's, you know, you know, oftentimes automation, we don't go backwards. So tailor yourself and work with your recruiter, work with that talent acquisition contact, right? Whoever's, you know, if they're like, Lyle, we really, you know, one of the things I find valuable as a candidate is when I get CV feedback, because I see one CV, okay? One, maybe a couple of friends, but that's it. You guys see thousands of CVs. And so I have had feedback. I think my CV is pretty darn cool, right? I like it because I'm proud of it, but I have heard feedback and that is not flattering, right? And it's kind of hard to hear that. There's an ego component to it, but I'm
your
like,
baby
all
is
right.
ugly, Lyle.
My baby. Listen, man, you're an ugly baby. You're an ugly baby. Your CV baby is ugly. And I'm like,
my baby's not ugly. Look at him. I've had him for years.
You're like, no, dude, the CV baby's ugly, man. You gotta transition. And maybe your baby wasn't ugly 20 years ago when you first got in the game.
Agreed.
So being able to hear that as a candidate and tailoring yourself, tailoring your CV, tailoring your LinkedIn, right? Again, tailoring is not deceiving. And I think some people get twisted in that, right? They're like, well, I'm a manager, I'm a director, I've done these things. Yeah, but you also can be CRA. You've also done those roles, right? You're not inventing experience. What you're doing is you're focusing the spotlight. People have a very limited amount of focus. Right. And that light needs to be focused on the most applicable thing for that position, has to be tailored to that role. So you get through the automated processes so you can actually get in the door in front of humans, and a human can go, holy shit, this Lyle guy. Right. Yeah, he's a CRA. But look at these other things like you talked about with your ex-US client. You know, that ex-US client then gets to see that CV and be like, man, this person could do some stuff for us. You know, we could build a relationship. We can take this forward. But that's you have to get through the filters that exist and not pretend they don't exist. You know, I could pretend the sky's not blue. Sky's still blue.
Well, but your version of blue might be different than my version of blue because of whatever. But you're absolutely right. And I think the other thing, too, that – and I know Becky's got this. We got to wrap
Becky's,
up. Look on her face.
Becky's got
this.
Yeah, no, I'm
– Yeah.
Like, really,
I hate it.
Can you not tell a super long story right now?
No,
sorry.
The best. But I think the other two things that we should probably talk – this is – we're talking about major differences, and I'll make this very brief – is, first of all, we're in a skill-based market rather than a how many years you've done it market. And we've been pushing for this for a long time. We actually were one of the leaders in the pack that started doing the competency-based interviewing rather than the, oh, you've got 5 years of oncology, I'm going to put you in front of all of my oncology clients. No, I want to talk to you about your oncology experience, the endpoints, the challenges or the whatever. So I think candidates need to understand that they need to position their skills and they need to be prepared to speak details in the interviews, because if they can't, they're not going to get there.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing is, the networking today is different than the networking was pre-COVID. We're more global and we're more remote now. And so let's say that you're applying to be a CRA for a company. Don't just look for to network with operations managers in the United States. Network with operations managers across the globe, because everything now is so much smaller than it used to be. And I think people make take a flawed approach in thinking that, hey, I just care about the clinical trial managers that sit in Boston. No, you don't. You care about them in Israel, in the UK, and everywhere else as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that is an entire, we could have a whole additional conversation around that, around how, you know, and Becky's still waving at me. Sorry. No more long stories, Lyle. We're done with those. All right. I'll be
brief. But we'll have a part two. You guys stay tuned, because okay. We want to continue this topic. So yeah absolutely, yeah. Lyle, keep going.
Okay. It's okay. So as a prelude, as a teaser for part two, I think that the conversation about skills-based versus experience-based, incredibly important. I think there's a lot more to talk about that. And I think it's for an old head like me, right? I'm like, I've been in the game for 26 years. That should mean something. It doesn't. What it means is you've had an opportunity to build up a whole crap load of skills, right? That's what people want to hear.
Because that 26 years might also mean that you are now the housekeeper that comes to my house and refuses to do windows.
That's right. That's right. That's such a good point, especially if you're down, if you're taking it to a lower level position, right?
Yeah.
Lyle, you were a director. Why do you want to be a senior CRA? You're overqualified for this role. Well, let me tell you why, right? You know, here's the skills I bring to the table. And absolutely, right? And the global versus regional networking, I fall in this trap. Because, again, old head, to me, networking was a physical thing that you did, right? Like, it was people meeting
business
people
cards,
at happy hours and
shakes,
business cards. Come on. Like, I got business cards for the first time in, like, 15 years, and I just keep staring at them as these relics of some long-gone era. I'm like,
your Rolodex.
Yeah, seriously, dude. I'm like, what do I do with a business card, right? Make a little fort on my desk. So, like a little stack of paper cards. It's just a different mindset for people. And yeah. I think especially for a person, if you're coming in and having not been in the game for a while, or if you have a higher, you know, you have a different role and you're coming into CRA from a different, you know, a different direction, understanding that global, you know, I have contacts across the globe now, right? Because someone like Angela took the time and is like, hey, Lyle, you know, when you work with these global companies, maybe make some connections. So,
yeah, for sure. Sure.
But
love
I didn't.
It.
I didn't think about that myself. It took someone else telling me.
I love
this
humility.
Discussion. Well, oh. And I love this discussion today, and I really appreciate it. I know that it's really early for you and that you've got to actually go to your job now, but
I have to
thank
go
you.
Like put clothes on and stuff. It's yeah.
Thank you so much, Lyle. And definitely everybody stay tuned for part two of this discussion. We're going to do that as well. Record that at some point really soon. So thank you, Lyle, for joining us.
Thanks,
Angela,
guys.
As well. Thanks to everybody out there listening. And at CRA Resources, we understand you have many options when it comes to selecting which clinical recruiting company to partner with. Not only do we take pride in working with the highest quality CRAs and site managers, we also only work with quality pharmas, biotechs, medical device companies, and CROs who recognize the importance and value of a CRA's role. So feel free to reach out at CRAResources.com for more information about our firm.